welcome back to the Lazy Muse Podcast, episode 10. I'm Jimmy G.
10.
10 Diaz.
Who are you?
I'm Jimmy G.
I'm Eric Gratton.
And we're just a couple of actors who sit around bullshitting about the things we like to watch.
A lot of bullshit up in here.
So, we got some exciting news here for episode 10.
Well, what is that exciting news, Jimmy?
Well, Eric, for any of our listeners who may be athletically inclined or perhaps wanting to become athletic or get off the couch.
Everybody wants that.
We have a giveaway.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. So, I was contacted by the Reebok Spartan Race people.
Huge.
And we have a code which will get you a free entry. Now, this is will save you anywhere between $70 and $100, depending on when you you apply for the race.
Yes.
But we have a code that will get you a free race.
What race is that?
That is the Reebok Spartan Race. So this is sort of like the Tough Mudder. It's a obstacle course, about 4 miles, lots of mud, very challenging.
Well, you know, now they have these races that have barbed wire and fire.
Right.
You know, pretty soon we're going to have these races with live fire ammunition from sniper rifles.
This is one of those.
This shit is going on. All right, continue.
It's anywhere in the continental United States.
That includes both Mississippi and West Virginia.
Right, right. Just in case you didn't have any geography class in those states.
Both Dakotas.
Both
included.
Dakotas, which I'm not sure if they have a race in the Dakotas. But if they did...
Well, perhaps they have a race in the third Dakota,
right.
Also known as Montana.
Montana. So, here's the deal.
Yes.
To win this free Spartan race...
What do you do?
You need to go to iTunes.
iTunes is the winning place.
That's right. And you need to leave us a comment.
Some comment. We have no comments on iTunes. We rock on Podomatic.
Right.
iTunes, we got
nothing. Except for the one that I put up.
Well, yeah, it was impressive.
So, go to iTunes and leave us anything. It could be telling us how terrible we are.
Oh, I'm desperate for a one-star review that effectively uses both metaphor and allusion.
Ooh.
To explain how terrible.
Allusion.
We are. Allusion. Yes.
Right, with an A.
Very important.
So, give us a compliment, a critique, slam us, give us 1 star, 5 stars, it doesn't matter. The person who...
Talking to you, Grog. Do it.
Right. The person who impresses us the most, be that 1 star with a hilarious smack in the face, or 5 stars with an earnest ball washing, we don't care.
We don't.
In 2 weeks, or 3 weeks' time, excuse me,
we'll say 3 weeks, yeah.
When the season finale of Game of Thrones...
Oh, it's coming because we have next week off.
Next week is...
That means in the next 2 weeks, we'll have 3 episodes that have nothing to do with Game of Thrones.
That's right. So all you Game of Thrones haters, you can start loving the Lazy Muse. So we will read through those comments, those stars, and we will award one person a free entry into the Reebok Spartan Race.
Much like almost all reality television, your votes mean nothing to us. We will decide.
Right.
Who wins.
Right. And you can also go to our Facebook page. That is facebook.com/ The Lazy Muse.
Not forward slash.
Right, and leave us a comment there. But more importantly, we also have an unlimited number of 15% off discounts to said Reebok Spartan Race, which are up for grabs for anyone who goes to our Facebook page and says, hey, give me 15% off.
Within the continental United States.
Within,
that almost
right.
Includes Montreal.
Almost.
But it does not.
And they do have a race in Montreal. That's one of the few that I remember.
Yes, but y'all can't.
This won't help you. No. It won't help you at all.
Y'all fuckers can't do it.
So.
And Quebecois. Too fucking bad.
So what is our beer of the day, Mr. Gratton?
Our beer of the day is Lagunitas Hop Stupid Ale. Alcohol 8% by vol, which is short.
For volume.
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 Yes, with a liquid U. Brewed and bottled by the Lagunitas Brewing Company in I never do it right.
Do us a favor. Read us the side here. This is funny.
Wonderful. Clean this mess up, or else we'll all end up in jail. Those test tubes and the scale. Just get them all out of here. He was referring to the complex, supercritical CO2 hop extraction equipment set up on the table in the lab across from the brew house. Hop extracts are for the big brewers, B-I-G, all in caps, he thought. Suitable only for the crummy, substandard, and barely passable industrial lagers. Not the subtle and elegant craft beer made here. But wrong he was. The new brewer does not eschew any possible inputs. In this case, the extract will replace the mountains of hop, vegetative material in the kettle, thus creating cleaner hop flavors and preventing the otherwise spinach-like mess of a kettle full of super-hopped wort from clogging up a pump or worse. The sensuous honey-like amber ooze was administered intravenously to the wort kettle, and the sacrament was complete. Another kettle of hop stupid is once again raised up and fermented on high. Call us at 707-769-4495! Cheers.
Well read. Thank you very much. And our friends at the Beer Advocate give this beer rating of 94 out of 100.
94 is pretty good. We recommend Beer Advocate, by the way.
Exceptional. I wonder what kind of yeast they use in this, because there is a kind of a clovey taste to it, and the clove taste is usually attributed to the yeast. That's why a lot of German beers use it. Banana and clovey flavor, but it's really hoppy, and I'm not a hop head. I don't like hoppy beers, and this is not bad, not one of my favorites, but...
I'm a huge hop head. I love the IPA, I love the APA, I love all the PAs, except Pennsylvania. Not a big fan. I caught neither the clove nor the banana, but I did really enjoy this beer.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Nice finish. And we just want to drop a few names here because there were some people who went to the Facebook page and left us some beer recommendations. Matthew Maya recommended the Union Jack IPA. He says of the Union Jack that it's a great nutty beer that finishes smooth. And, you know, we didn't ignore anybody who made these suggestions. I just saw Hop Stupid at the corner of my eye, and I couldn't resist anything spelled with two O's.
Now, Matthew, this does sound like a limey beer. Is Matthew from across the pond?
He's not. He's from Wyoming.
Oh, all right. Then you're accepted. Not that I hate our friends from across the pond, being Irish that I am. But the Union Jack raises some problems within my boiling blood.
Wow.
I will try the IPA, though, because, as I said, I like the hoppy stuff. Tell me what Kathleen Cat Sutton suggested.
Yes, she suggested Diamond Not Known. I couldn't find this at all. She did mention that it's often found at beer stores and that you buy it in growlers often.
Oh,
so this is certainly a local beer. And Kat is the pastry chef of the Lake Union Cafe and Custom Bakery.
You don't say.
Yeah, so she makes very lovely cakes and cheesecakes and pies and desserts. Do you? Is he sexy?
No.
Oh, asshole. And our last beer recommendation comes from Q Harrison Sweeney.
A frequent commenter and contributor to the podcast.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Sort of. My favorite comments from Q this week were about how much he enjoys the podcast and how we'll get it right one of these days.
Right.
Thank you, Q.
He recommended Groove.
I'm in.
It's the coolest I could find. I didn't find this at the store. I went online. Sounds like it's its own brew house in Southern California.
I used to live there.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I left, but they had some really good beer.
So, Harrison can be found at www.kharrison. That's KHARRISON.
Is that
RR? Sweeney, SWEENEY.biz. That will take you to his IMDb Pro page where you can see little clips of a lot of this guy's work. He's been all over the place. And if you're a Red Dead Redemption fan, you will know his voice very well because he's one of the main characters.
All right, Q, thank you so much. Keep listening, and we appreciate it.
So, let's get into Game of Thrones.
Oh, shall we? What are we, 13 minutes in?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe a half hour.
All right.
Who knows? So, Game of Thrones, Season 3, Episode 8, The Second Sons.
The Second Sons.
This was directed by Michelle McLaren.
Who we very much have enjoyed her work.
Yes. And, of course, we have our usual suspects, David Benioff and D.B. Rice as the writers.
D.B. Weiss.
Weiss, sorry.
I feel like I need to
Rice?
Your pronunciation.
Always.
Every once in a while, especially when we're... 10 minutes into the 8%
Don't
beer.
Don't ever hesitate to correct that.
There are a lot of pronunciation miscues in our past, and it just makes me feel like I'm talking to my father, who calls Chevy Chase Chevy.
Right.
Shall we move on?
We shall. So we only have two more episodes, but three more weeks left of season 3. We will be concluding Game of Thrones on June 9th. So I have to say right off the bat, some of these last few episodes have really felt like we're just stalling for time, especially for the book readers, for what we know is coming.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, for the people who've read the books, we know how this season ends. We know it.
Right.
Absolutely. That said, I thought the last three or four... That said...
We're pretty good.
That's my
That
game.
Said.
That right. said is my game. I say what I say, then I say that said,
right.
then I say it again. That said...
And there's the again.
Yes. The last few episodes, I think, have been among the best of the series.
Agreed.
I think this has, in the past, tended to be a...
Dipping point?
The series has been a little bit... clumsy in terms of writing and acting and editing, and I've enjoyed it.
Oh, right. And
the last couple episodes, even while nothing has happened, except maybe one scene per episode.
But are you're mainly referring to earlier seasons, right?
Mainly.
Because I think this season has certainly been the strongest.
Yes.
And I don't know if there's any...
What has happened this season? Very little has happened this season while it's still being the strongest.
I think a lot has happened.
All right.
Because even the book is just it's a long saga of very small things happening, and you're just waiting for,
one scene per episode, something happens.
Right.
Yes.
Which is...
So 5 minutes per hour. Yeah.
Which I think equates to the book, in terms of the book is like 1,100 pages, so it's going to have many more of these big moments,
but you're talking 600 pages.
Right, so
it's
still...
Yeah.
I think it's nice. Maybe it's comparable.
Okay.
So, what's your overall rating for this episode then?
For this episode.
For this episode.
Who am I giving the winning?
Right. Second Sons.
Oh, this is tough. I think you have to give it 3 or even 4 dragons. This episode.
You're giving it to Danny.
Yeah, I think that you gotta give it to Danny based on stuff that actually happens.
What do you mean?
Well. There's a difference between what happens and what is hinted upon. You know, the wedding
right.
in this episode, which we'll talk about, isn't the important part of the upcoming weddings. There are like 9 weddings in the next
right,
12
right.
days.
These guys are marriage happy.
Yes. So I'm not really thinking that, as much as I love Dame Diana Rigg, that her fantastic dialogue in the wedding scene is enough to give me...
Right, yeah, it's not a... No. I would agree.
And as much as I think the very best scene is the scene that lasted exactly 2 lines, I think it might be the best scene in the history of the show. It's not enough to give it to the Lannisters. We'll talk about it.
Nice.
I think the important thing
that could be one of 2 scenes.
Yes. I think the important thing that happened in this episode was Dany gaining the mercenaries.
Okay. All right. I wouldn't disagree. with that assessment, although I will give it to somebody else.
All right, hit me.
I'm going to give this 3 stars.
Okay.
Because I enjoyed it, but I don't think it was as great as, like, Danny getting the Unsullied.
No, sure.
But I'm going to give this 3 striding huntsmen.
Oh, is that right?
Proper garbed ghouls. I have no idea what G-U-L-E-S means. But if you don't know, that is the house sigil of House Tarly.
Yes.
Of Horn Hill.
Old Samwise.
Old Samwise. And although we'll talk about
There's
his
no
incompetence.
Way to do this well, without a Samwise, by the way.
Right.
It's just impossible.
Although there was some incompetence, I'm giving this to him simply because he killed a White Walker.
Understood.
And that's a big deal because up until this point, whether you were a book reader or you're just watching the series and that's it, nobody's known how to kill these guys. And now a really big piece of information has been shared.
I'm right now showing a picture of the Wikipedia entry for ghouls.
Is the tincture
to
the color red and belongs to the class?
Harold Green is basically just a color red. That's what it is.
Okay, so that was.
So Samwell has a red herald.
Red herald with a huntsman, and it looks like he's kind of dancing almost.
Yeah.
So
he's doing a little bit of the
a jig,
a little bit of size work there, a little bit of the Gangnam style.
Hochul Gangnam style. Yeah, so I give it to Sam. And we'll talk about that scene at the end, because
yes,
it was the final scene.
It is at the end.
So moving on into the episode itself, the very first scene, we open with Arya thinking about bashing in the Hound's head.
Well, thinking about it, I mean,
pretty seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, she's over him.
She's there with a rock.
With a rock.
A big old rock.
And it was really well shot with the out-of-focus blur, and then it focuses in on the rocket. So she's been awake thinking about doing this for a while.
And let's talk a little bit about the focus puller. The focus puller is an unheralded position in any film production crew.
And this was given to us by whom?
What do you mean?
Do you know who invented this?
No, who invented the focus puller?
Well, I don't know the technician or the cinematographer who invented it.
Yeah.
The director who insisted that it needed to be invented was Orson Welles.
I knew it was going to go to Orson Welles.
For Citizen Kane.
Yes, because that entire movie is about the lighting. And the
focus
puller uses the lighting and the distance between the camera and the actor to make sure that we're all looking at the thing we are supposed to look at.
Right.
That said, it's done very well in this series. When the camera moves from focusing on one thing to another, we all need to understand that is a choice by the director, the writer, the cinematographer, the lighting designer, everybody gets together and decides that shot is incredibly important. And it's true that in this moment, that was a really nice shot.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, as I said earlier, and there's some interesting things here on their little ride. You know, he gives her the challenge, and she doesn't do it.
Well, the first thing that happens is he offers her a bite of his apple.
Right.
And she refuses. He says, all right, sulk if you want to.
Right. Right.
Wonderful.
And then, you know, so the Hound reveals quite a bit of information here. He saved Sansa from being raped.
Well, yes.
And that, you know, you're pretty lucky because there's a lot of people that would rape a little girl like you. He doesn't say I'm not one of them, but, you know, he's certainly inferring. He's like, listen, I could rape you right now.
Yeah.
I could take you to town.
Which means that he's not a nice guy.
I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying
this
guy could go all Genghis Khan on her, but, you know, he's letting her know. Which, like you're saying, it isn't a nice guy stance to let you know, listen, I could be a douchebag. I'm deciding not to be.
Yeah.
So be thankful for that.
He's going huge Westeros bro.
But is he? So my question is the Hound trying to be liked here? I mean, why is he going out of his way to let her know all the good things he's done and how he's trying to help her out?
I don't know. How is that? I think it's probably that he has nowhere to go, and he's trying to figure out if he wants to use her the way he clearly wants to. The only out he has is to take this girl
right
and use her as ransom in one way or another. That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
he hasn't decided how to do it yet.
That's the only reasonable, choice he has. I mean, if this was Joffrey, he would just rape her and shoot her full of arrows.
Well, yeah, but no one's Joffrey,
except for Joffrey.
Right, Joffrey's going to die, and Batman's going to be pissed. And
there's all kinds of bad guys in this show. People who would treat her poorly, yes. And I guess what just popped in my head.
But that doesn't mean I have to like.
No, of course not. I'm not asking if you should or if you do like him. I'm just asking out there because when this scene happened, my first question was. Is this a character thing? Because in the book, we have a long time with these two.
Yes.
So you get to see sort of a development. Not that I'm not hinting at where it goes. I'm just asking for the TV series. One, they're trying to get you to like the Hound, or are the writers saying that we're too dumb to know that he's done some nice things and that, when he tells Arya, don't go bashing my head in because I'm trying to get you where you want. Are they really talking to the audience?
Well, no, I think it can be in between because I don't think he's saying don't go bashing my head in. I think he's actually saying what he means. He says do it.
He does have a bit of a suicidal thing.
Yeah, I think that if she bashes his head and he dies, I don't know that, I'm an atheist, so I don't think his soul's going anywhere. But I think that maybe if he thinks his soul's going anywhere, I don't think he's going to be pissed at Arya for doing it.
Right.
I think that he's going to love her.
Love her.
Well, no, love the fact that she's willing to take that chance. He's telling her what he will do if she does it.
Right.
But I don't think he's saying don't do it. He's saying if you do it, this is the reaction. That's not the same thing.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. So, and there's an interesting thing here because we have yet another study in redemption. We have a person who has certainly done questionable things. He cut the butcher boy in half at the behest of his king.
Of course.
I would say probably in comparison to our other two studies of redemption, Jaime Lannister and Theon Greyjoy, this guy is probably the closest to a good guy out of the three.
I will disagree. I think Jaime's the closest to a good guy.
But he's killed a lot more people they've shown us. Perhaps the Hound has killed, but we haven't been shown those other deaths. We've seen him kill the one boy, and then everything else he did was kind of stand up for Sansa. Like, don't beat on a girl.
The deaths we've seen that Sandor has done have been because someone told him to. The deaths we've seen that Jaime has done has been because he loved the wrong person and...
He killed his cousin just so he could get out of fetters.
Yeah, he did.
I wouldn't say that either one of those deaths are,
because his prince told him to do that.
Right, but he's not fucking his sister.
No, well, this is a show that is called, if I'm not mistaken, Incest Boobies. The name of the show
that's true.
Is Incest Boobies.
So you got to have him somewhere. But, okay, well, it's interesting because I think he is closer to being a good guy. Not that he is a good guy. I'm saying these are all douchebags.
Yes.
But...
Well, no, the good guys are all douchebags, too.
That's true. I think he may be... from what I've seen and from what I remember in the books, he seems just like this grumpy anti-hero.
Sure. I can see that. I will say that there are no male characters in this entire show that are really worthy of rooting for. There are... I feel free to root for Dany. I feel free to root for Sansa and Arya and all of the Tarleys. Not Tarleys. All of the...
Tullys?
Tullys.
Yeah.
No, not even the Tullys. The Roses.
The Tyrells.
Tyrells. I feel completely free to root for Marjorie and the Queen of Thorns.
Right.
Totally free to root for all of those women. There's not a man in this
really, not even Bran?
Series. Yeah, maybe. I mean, Bran, sure.
He's a kid, he's not boring. A man.
He's boring. None of them are boring.
Right.
I don't root for boring people.
I like Jon. Jon Snow?
Yeah.
Even though he knows nothing, I like him.
Yeah, I root for Greg more than I root for him. And I know how that ends.
All right. So we move on to scene two. Dany invites the second sons to parlay.
Now, we combine a couple of mercenary companies.
Yes, in this, thank you.
Which is frustrating to me.
I can't understand why they did it.
Of course, I can always understand why.
A little bit.
Yes.
But, I mean, what's your big frustration here?
My big frustration is that what we lose keeps us from seeing some of the wonderful tactical decisions that Danny makes.
Right.
And it turns it into a choice by Dario instead of it being a mixture of that and wonderful tactical choices that Danny makes at the same time.
Right. And we don't get... In this, they drop the line from the book, "I am but a girl and I know nothing of the ways of war." But it's kind of brushed under the carpet. And this is one of the things that was not as big as her... I'm taking the soul unsullied from you.
Right.
But it was a close second for me of things that impacted me in the book that I just love. Because there's several, she has more than one meeting. So she meets with the Second Sons and the Stormcrows,
yes,
who we lost. Yes. And each one of these, she says that, "I know nothing of the ways of war. I am but a girl and I know nothing of the ways of war."
I think it's very different than how she got the unsullied. It's a different situation,
right,
and
absolutely.
I think it's more impressive. It's not, "I have my dragon blow fire in your face, and I take them."
It's not trickery.
It's not. It's, I am smarter and more able to command than you are,
right,
and I think that's important.
And
we miss that when, I mean, we'll get to it, but when it turns out the way it turns out in this episode, we miss that, and it becomes, I hand you this.
And she plays her part, you know, so these people think she's weak.
Yes.
And so she uses that against them.
Yes.
You know, the worst thing you can do is underestimate anybody, because you're overestimating yourself.
Yes.
And, you know, these people all come in thinking, you know, we have this dumb little girl here. And she allows them to think that.
Well, and the actor who plays the head of the Stormcrows actually does a really good job in this. Head of the Second Sons.
Mark Killeen.
Yes, does a very good job for the most part. I would like to think that the stupid choice when he sits down and talks about tonguing her and then he tongues the heir was the director's idea.
Like, make him as dirty as possible.
Well, I mean, you don't have to do it. We know what he said, and it's one of those frustrating things as an actor that you watch someone do something, and you know the audience just goes, "Oh, well, now he's got to die." You know, it's, to me, that is frustrating.
Right.
Because he's a good actor. The rest of his work in the episode is really very good. You can be incredibly misogynistic and stupid the way he was without doing that stupid.
Right.
You know.
Right.
We all want him dead anyway. We don't need to know he's going to die. And the minute he does that, we know he's going to die.
Yeah, and he died, you know. So, and we'll get to his death a little bit later. Noticeably absent right away is Brown Ben Plum.
It's so frustrating. They get rid of all of the favorite characters.
Yeah, the side characters. These little characters
The favorite side characters.
You know, if you read the book, they don't take up a lot of space. But they're always there.
They take up a lot of your imagination
and
as
they
a
take
reader.
Up, and this is, you know, and I put question mark in my show notes here because there's a seeming lack of characters of color written into fantasy novels from what I've read.
Yes.
And George R.
Martin very true.
Has more than what I've seen in others.
Yes.
And this is one of them. And this guy is, he's a force in the books.
Yeah.
No,
I mean...
And he may come back later.
It's talked about a ton with Game of Thrones, and it should be, that the opportunities to cast actors of color are completely ignored.
Right.
Almost 100%.
Right.
They're completely ignored.
From our geek perspective,
yeah,
we've touched upon it before, but as actors, it is absolutely commonplace now. In fact... You have to have a reason not to colorblind cast Shakespeare.
And you should.
Right. I mean, now it doesn't matter, and this is a comparison we used before. Romeo can be Chinese, his parents can be black, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to justify
that. And the important part of that is that the audience doesn't care.
Right.
Even in places where producers in New York and L.A. would think that in Mississippi you'd care about that shit.
They don't.
You don't care. 3 minutes into it, you don't even fucking notice.
Right.
And it, the same thing would happen in film if you would just do it.
So none of these people, they could have, the Starks could have been black.
Yeah.
And it would not have made a difference.
Well, not even that. Other than, the Starks could have been white and their kids could be black and it wouldn't have made a difference.
It just
cast good actors.
Was a it was an opportunity missed because of supposed logic.
It was an obvious opportunity missed.
I
mean, I understand when producers miss the subtle logic and opportunities, but the easy ones, like the character's name is Brown Ben Plum.
Right.
You know, the easy ones.
Well, and this character is missing. He can come back. I mean, him not being here isn't as important because we can still meet this guy.
Yes, this guy doesn't die in this moment.
Right. So we can meet this guy. So this, you know, we're saying now, we know for a fact that D.B. Weiss and David Benioff listen to this podcast.
Oh, of course. They love
it. It's true as the sun is hot.
Oh, yes.
They, in fact, they're probably not writing any scripts for next season
until they hear what we have to say.
So we're just letting you guys know, giving you forewarning, don't disappoint us with the casting of Brown Ben Plum.
Well, and since you've ignored a ton of the world with colorblind casting, I mean, throw us a bone with Dorn. Throw us a bone with Dorn. Do something interesting.
So Dario is the most important character here.
Yes.
And most important because of the way he looks.
Well, we've been talking about this a little bit. I don't know that I considered him white when I was reading it, but I certainly know I considered him looking absolutely nothing like he looked.
Right, nothing, with the braid in his hair hanging down. I mean, to be sure.
Describe how he looks in this book.
This guy's pretty. What's his name? This guy, Ed Skrein. I don't know.
S-K-R-E-I-N. Right. If it's
German,
it's
Skrein. We have
hot links
to all these
English,
people in our blog. But you can find him. He's only done three things. So we're going to talk about
it. And we're not saying he's bad.
He's not bad.
Here's
it's
what
just,
we're saying.
You know, this is what, this is how George R.R. Martin describes the character. In Dario Naharis was flamboyant even for a Tyroshi. His beard was cut into three prongs and dyed blue, the same color as his eyes and the curly hair that fell to his collar. His pointed mustachios were painted gold. His clothes were all shades of yellow, a foam of mirish lace, the color of butter spilled from his collar and cuffs. His doublet was sewn with brass medallions in the shape of dandelions, and ornamental goldwork crawled up his high leather boots to his thighs. Gloves of soft yellow suede were tucked into a belt of gilded rings, and his fingernails were enameled blue.
Not only his fingernails, but it's very clear how they talk about his beard, how they talk about his entire persona. His entire persona is the guy who has the neck tattoo and the lace around his collar at the same time.
Yeah.
This is a guy that should be played by Gary Oldman. This is over the top, but believable. This is ridiculously strange. Yeah.
Three prongs. And, you know, just to geek out here, the Tyroshi are known for themselves being flamboyant people.
Yeah.
All of them love bright colors. And they love gilded things. In fact, they're very known for two things. They're pear brandy.
Right.
And for making weapons and ornaments that are very ornate and elaborate. So like bird helms and things like that. And Dario is one of these guys. He is flamboyant. Like, you may, if you saw him, your first instinct might be like, wow, that guy's gay.
Well, no, to me...
And then he'd cut you.
Yeah, no, it seems to me that in reading the books, what's amazing about Danny's attraction to him is not that everyone who saw him would be attracted to him, but that she sees past all the outward shit.
Right.
And is attracted to who the guy is.
Right.
Which is someone who sees past all her outward shit and is attracted to her.
Right.
It's a real attraction. It's a real
thing
where two people see past all the bullshit and get into each other, not this blonde, cheekboned guy with muscles and
So now you're sending me off in tangents here.
All right.
So the first tangent.
Yes.
I wish I would have pulled some more readings, because there are a lot of these things that Dario does in the book where he's the type of character that says outlandish things. You know, he's like, tell me my queen, and I will rip his heart from his throat, and I'll lay it at you. I mean, these aren't words that Martin puts. It's things like that, but he means it. Like, he's over the top. This guy is, he is an overdramatic actor that utterly believes everything he does, so it's endearing. When you find somebody with such utter conviction, no matter how outlandish they are, there's something appealing about that.
Yes, this is Laurence Olivier, or Meryl Streep, or Al Pacino, or, as I said earlier, freaking Gary Oldman and Michael Caine. This is who this person is. This is someone who speaks loudly and doesn't have a ton of silence, and does what they think at all times. And that's the problem for Dani, is that she really likes this guy, but she can't control
him. And she fights
him.
It against it. Yeah. Like, she's like, she's a young girl.
Yeah.
And she's surrounded by old men.
It's not a mistake the way that this show seems to want to make it a mistake. They seem to want to make it that she sees this beautiful guy and makes a mistake. That's not what it should
right.
be.
Right. And so
it lessens Dani that she's attracted to this guy.
Right. And yes, and to play off your point about, you know, the looks, this ties into something that we've talked about at length, ad nauseum, depending on your take.
Well, they're both great.
But I want to add to the nauseum.
Ad means at, so bring it.
So we've talked about the characterization in the book and how it's been cast. And on one extreme, we have Bruce Bolton, which I think they really missed the boat on.
the bolt on.
Right. because of the sinisterness that we lost.
Yeah.
We talked how we wish Varga Hote was there, but we love what they did with Locke.
Yes. I still wish they talked like this.
Yeah. And maybe they didn't do it
Butter!
Right. Right. Because
don't let me be silly.
But so this is the same thing, though. Dario is intimidating, but he's intimidating in the exact same way that Barristan is, that Jorah is, that Robb Stark is. It's a homogeny of intimidation, and this other Dario would have been a different kind.
Except they've given him this beginning actor smile thing that drives me nuts. This is the worst casting yet.
Yeah. So, you know, he's
completely outclassed by the people. The two guys who play the other heads of the mercenary bands would have been better casting.
Kendall Nagazin, and of course Miro, the Titan's bastard.
Yeah, both of them would have been better casting for this role.
Yeah. So again, you know, guys, Dave, DB. Talk to your casting and your costuming people, because you could have done Dario
Let's be clear. The casting people didn't find this guy. They might have brought him into the room, but casting directors don't cast. Casting directors bring people into the room for the directors to cast. It's on you guys, DB.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because McLaren didn't cast this person.
No.
She's just given the script. Okay, so moving on to scene three.
Already? Yeah. We're on to scene three?
Melisandre.
Yeah, this is tough.
Delivers Gendry to Stannis.
I think we can move on and talk about this more when the rest of this happens.
Okay.
You know?
So we'll jump ahead. Nice little scene here in scene four with Stannis and Davos.
I think that to talk for one moment about being a very smart actor playing not as smart, I like what Davos does.
Mm.
Because it's tough to pretend not to be able to read.
Oh, right.
You know, it's a brief little bit.
Right.
But
it's
tough to pretend to sound out words.
Right.
Because it's a lame writer trick. And it's right. really well done by him. That's a tough acting moment to not look like you're condescending to a character.
Kudos on you.
Yeah.
So there's a, you know, I was looking around on some of the critique for the show.
Yeah.
And I came across an article by Todd Vanderwerf.
At AV Club.
At the AV Club. And this is the experts column. So there's two where there's a non-spoiler called right. Beginners, and then one with which is the expert, which,
takes
like we do, talks about the book as well. And he had a really interesting take on this scene, in that it was framed so that when they jump from Stannis to Davos' perspective, each one of them looks like they're imprisoned.
That's really interesting, yeah.
So, and it's, you know, having heard that, it's easy to then attach that, oh, yeah, you know, Stannis is imprisoned by these choices in front of him. You know, kill this kid with the king's blood and,
sure.
and maybe get what you want, and that's being the king, or stick to who you've always been, and that is, you know, he's known for being a hard ass, but always being just.
And this is, I think, the first time that I've seen Stannis be the character that I thought he was in the book, especially when it comes to his relationship with Davos.
Right.
We haven't seen... Every time I've seen the two of them together, I've seen Davos completely devoted to his king. But I haven't really seen why the king didn't kill him in the first place.
Right.
Do you know why the king thought of Davos as his hand? Why he thought
right.
of this guy as being the only person he could trust before Melisandre got in the middle of it?
You know? Right. And there's...
And this is really a terrific scene.
And if for the non-book readers, it's important to know that Stannis did imprison Davos in the book as well. So he was
oh, yeah.
down there. So, that, I mean, this is all the... That's...
It's similar. Important to note, too, that Jimmy says Davos and I say Davos.
I think it is Davos.
This is what years and years of reading a name that you
right.
never
it,
hear pronounced
to
does to you.
Because in the series, they say Davos.
Do they?
Yeah. Sir Davos.
I'm sure I would ignore it if they said Davos anyway, and I'd still say Davos.
Right. So...
I'm halfway to still calling him Tyrion.
So we have a little religious thing here, too, between the two of them.
Oh, very much.
And it's, you know, interesting when he said, you know, Stannis says, I saw a vision, a great battle in the snow. And, you know, how can you doubt it when you've seen it?
Right.
You know, like, and I kind of get
Which
it.
Is kinda,
like,
yeah.
If you saw water turned into wine, I guess you wouldn't go, well, maybe it wasn't wine. You'd have to stop and go, wow, that's, he did that.
Yeah, except I, you know.
Right. Well, I know your stance, and I believe me, I'm not trying to convince anybody. It's
no,
just,
no, no, no. I'm not even
show,
talking about religion. I'm saying that I've seen shows in Vegas where I have absolutely no idea how they did it, but I know it wasn't actually turning water into wine.
Right.
You know, I saw a show in Vegas last year that blew my freaking
right.
mind.
But I didn't want to eat anybody's body.
Right.
But, you know, and then...
And I grew up eating Jesus' body all the time. Yeah.
And there's an equally great counterpoint that Davos makes.
Yes.
And that, you know, I think that the gods are just something we make up to so our children aren't as afraid of the dark.
And it's kind of amazing because there's this doubt in his eyes even as he says that. Because
right.
this guy believes.
Well,
because
he saw a monster come out of, you
yeah.
know,
no.
out of Melisandre's vajayjay.
Exactly. So he's got reason to believe. So what he's really doing is trying to convince Stannis to change
right.
what he thinks.
And that's a big deal that not even in the books do they go into really is... the very powerful thing, because in our world, religion is very much just spiritual. It's like, hey, you know, it's all about faith. You got to believe. There's some crazy
sure.
as you said, they've seen some
I'm saying in your world, maybe it's that. But I spend a lot of time in an area of the country where that's not the way it's treated.
Right. Yeah. But even still, they can say they've seen something, but even they, it's... They can't prove that they've seen anything.
They don't have to.
This guy
yeah.
saw...
Oh, yeah. No, he did.
...a monster come out.
Yes.
And you know, when you still have doubt, or not even doubts, maybe say, okay, it's real. He's a real god. There is a Rolar. There's something that can make a shadow monster come out and kill somebody, but you're wrong.
Yes.
What you're doing with this power is wrong.
That is a brave stance to take against your king.
They haven't really delved into that. Like, that is martyrdom. That is somebody who believes and is willing to go to task for it. And that is powerful stuff there. Yeah, and it's what makes this guy awesome.
And two good actors. You know, that what kills me is that I think they missed an opportunity here, because I think they cast Stannis very well. And I think they direct him very well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, so far, he's exactly the same as so many of the other characters they've done.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, the other characters, like Roose Bolton, need to be differentiated from Stannis, because he's playing it exactly right. That's the character he is.
Right.
You know, he is staid, and he is calm, but inside he's roiling. But he will do what the plan is.
They would have followed a little bit more of what George R. R. Martin successfully put forth.
Yeah.
Millions of people didn't buy the book because it was okay.
Yes, but you gotta, I mean, we all understand that if everybody who bought the book watched the series and nobody else did, it'd be the biggest flop in the history of television.
True.
Yeah.
So true.
Let's talk about Yunkai.
Yunkai. So the second sons play a little bit of lottery to see who's going to kill Danny.
Yeah.
And Dario wins.
Or loses, depending on how you look at it before you see how it turns out.
You know, a big deal. I mean, I think it was even longer than the scene needed to be, because all it was is so that we could see that Dario was chosen.
Oh, we could see Dario's little half smile with dimples and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, moving on.
Whatever. Yeah. Scene six, you know, Tyrion collects his bride. He stops by to pick up Sansa.
Yeah, he does. It's a good little scene. He's so good. I mean, he's just so good.
And one of his best lines is coming up.
Yeah.
But again, it's fodder for later on. He picks up his bride, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we have scene seven, what I call the queen off.
Understood. You have Cersei and Margaery doing their thing.
Yes.
I really enjoy, throughout the series of books and through the series so far, the replay of the Reigns of Castamere going all the way through. It's fun. I think I like it so much because in about three seasons, the best part of it is going to happen at Winterfell. But
are you making a prediction here?
I am, because in the books, the most interesting version of the Reigns of Castamere happens in Winterfell in a couple of years.
Right.
But this is really well done. I mean, they're both terrific actors. And
we've talked about them before.
It's kind of wonderful.
And so here's my take on it. I agree that the acting was great. But my take on Cersei's, the character, not the actor, her seeing these things is that she's a frightened person. That she is mortally afraid of what will happen to her as her position in the realm once Margaery is officially the queen, because she'll no longer be the regent.
Yes.
And these are, I think, empty threats. I don't think the Tyrells can really be compared to the House Rain. They're nowhere near as established or big or powerful, even though they are the second, quote-unquote, wealthiest. So I think this is the type of threat that a frightened person makes.
Yes. No, I completely agree. And I think what you're saying there is that Lena Headey, or Headey, is doing exactly what is called for with the character.
Exactly.
The most impressive moment from an acting standpoint that I thought this scene had was the very beginning when Margaery grabbed her arm and started walking with her down the ramp. What I saw from Cersei is a very brief but strong attempt to break that contact.
Right.
She tried, without moving her arm and without doing that, she, to me, tried to distance herself as they walked down the steps together. And she didn't show it in her face, and she didn't show it anywhere, but in her feet, trying to make Marjorie let go of her arm. Who the fuck are you? Please don't grab me in this way, and I can't be seen to take it off. So what she did was she told this story. And it was really, I thought, an amazing scene from her.
Right.
She was wonderful.
Great acting from Lena Headey. And this is where we're going to stop and really kind of give the shit to Dario, the actor playing Dario.
Yeah.
Because this scene here, it really shows you what good acting is. And that is because the way Lena Headey plays this, she's not playing a quality.
There's no L in there. I did it too.
Lena?
Headey.
Headey, right. Yeah. Sorry, Lena Headey. The way she plays it is not playing a quality. She's doing something. She has a playable action here.
Yeah.
And she's not trying to show...
She's not playing pretty, she's not playing interesting. She's playing this person in this moment, in this situation.
And, you know, that's what makes what she did so great, because the character, for me, came across as weak and frightened. But she did exactly what she was supposed to do, because had she played it like she was trying to be a badass, then I wouldn't have got that.
Right. It would have been boring.
You know, this young guy playing Dario, Ed Skrein, we're going to say.
Sure, we'll say Skrein.
You know, he's only done three things that I could find on IMDb, so he's really wet behind the ears. And he really is just trying to be sexy.
I haven't looked him up. I mean, maybe he's been doing a bunch of stage stuff. I don't know.
But he's a writer, musician, painter.
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure.
So he's got his feet in everything.
Sure. I'm not impressed as yet. Maybe they'll prove us wrong in the next couple of weeks by making the character more deep than what he is.
And it's certainly, if they don't make him more extravagant, then they really are just striking out.
Yeah, they missed an opportunity.
So kudos to Lena, because it was just really brilliantly played. I think maybe her best scene since the episode, I forget what season, where she talks about Robert beating her. And it was all bullshit.
And there's one episode where she talks about Bran too, which I thought was really interesting. She's a terrific actor. I'm really happy at that casting.
Right. And then, you know, so we go right into the one of many weddings coming up on Game of Thrones.
I think we have 14 weddings in the next 2 weeks.
Married. I mean, these guys are like Mormons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're getting freaking married.
So, I mean, all this scene did for
Here is where I would normally defend Mormons. I'm just not going to.
Right. Yeah. Why would
not,
you?
Yeah, not necessary.
I mean, it's just it's just all this scene did was show you, you know, Joffrey continues to climb the douche ladder.
Oh, yeah. No, he's getting to the end. I mean, the douche ladder doesn't go much higher. And Joffrey's ability to climb anything is also not going much higher. So, I don't think we're giving anything away there. what I loved, I'll save it for in two scenes. We'll talk a little bit more about
Joffrey. Okay. Yeah. So I don't think much has to be said about that.
No.
and then we have booty time for Gendry.
Gendry has become a different character than the books.
The actor Joe Dempsey was ecstatic when he saw this in the breakdown.
I don't know that's true. This is terrifying.
Well, I guess so, but I mean, I'd be terrified now because I'm a 42-year-old man with a family. But when I was 17 years old, you told me I'm going to see some hot chick in her boobies? Like, bring it on. Let me see them boobies.
Sure.
And he got to see
And him. Let's let her put leeches up my gooch.
Right, but we all know that was fake.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Dry humping. It's not fake.
Dry humping is often fake.
Well,
but let's continue.
Literally fake. Yes, you're not getting the.
Do you want me to go back to my high school years when we had an actual assembly at the Olathe North High School auditorium, where we had our sex ed assembly, and I'm sure very nice woman came in and talked to us about what we could do, except sex.
And dry humping was one of them.
She used the term and went into detail as to what it was. And I'm, wow. And everybody in the room sat in stunned silence with mouths open. No, I was not aroused. It was an amazingly difficult moment in my development as a human being. And I think I share that with 400 other seniors in the class of 1994 at Olathe North High School. Please write in. Yes, in Olathe, Kansas.
Oh, my
Please
goodness.
Please write in and tell us if you remember that assembly.
So we get a little bit of torture
porn. It's called dry humping.
Dry humping.
And you don't take your clothes off.
No, right. And his pants were on.
Yes, it's true.
A little bit of torture porn here with the leeches going into the Netherlands.
Him and Will Wheaton.
Yikes. And so, I mean, what's... Stannis is a bit of a cuckold here.
No.
I mean, do you have to have penetration to be a cuckold?
You got to be married to the person to be a cuckold.
That's true.
Yeah. No. Stannis
has
nothing.
Are you romantic about this?
A little bit.
He's with her.
No, he's not.
He's with her. That's his woman.
No.
They're together.
No, that's Rhaelor's woman.
That's who?
Rhaelor, however you want to say it.
Oh, right.
However
right.
you pronounce it. There's an apostrophe in there that makes it tough.
Okay, Rhaelor.
Yeah, however you want to say it.
So, I mean, because, you know... His queen, Celeste? Celeste is okay with him.
Melisandre is her own thing, and you know it.
Still,
nobody knows
this is Stannis. He's a prude about everything except for the red woman sleeping with whomever she wants.
That's right.
And I don't know about that, man.
All right.
He needs to stand up.
I don't think
Protect
so.
Protect his vajayjay.
It's not his. It's hers.
It is hers.
And
she gives
desires.
It to whomever she
yes.
wants.
Yes. You know the song, My Thing Is My Own? It's a good song. Her thing is her own, man.
All right. Well, I'm not cool with it.
All right.
I mean, so did this scene do anything for you other, you know?
This was more of the incest boobies kind of gratuitous bullshit. It was fine. It was well acted, but it was there so we could have this
conversation.
Did
your special lady friend walk in?
No, thank God.
Right.
For once, she didn't walk in and go, is this what you like? No, this is not what happened.
Right. I didn't learn anything from this. And I thought even when they put the leeches in the fire that maybe we'd see a vision or something and nothing.
No. This was foreshadowing. This was, you put four leeches in the fire for the three kings
right.
who are not Stannis. And
right.
since we've read the books, we know what happens to those three kings.
Right.
This was foreshadowing, just like in the books. It didn't happen the same way, but this happened in the books.
Yeah.
This is where we're casting a spell over What's-His-Fuck in the Iron Islands, Joffrey and Robb. And what the fuck happens to What's-His-Fuck in the Iron Islands and Joffrey
blah,
and Robb?
We don't talk about that now.
All right.
Although I don't think even when we can talk about it, it's not going to be attributed to her.
No, I'm not saying it is. I'm saying that we're supposed to think that
this
is
what's
going to
happen.
Yeah,
and that's my point is I don't think that's...
You think Rhaelor has no fucking power. That's what you think. You think he got nothing.
No, I don't. I think he does.
You think he got nothing.
A demon baby came out of her vajayjay. That's power.
Then why don't you think he kills all these other guys?
Because there's other things involved.
Are there?
I believe so.
All right, let's move on.
See,
wedding number 9.
We have Tyrion and Sansa Lannister.
Yes, we do.
Or do you think she's a hyphen? You think she took Lannister Stark?
I think she probably is just Sansa.
Sansa?
I think she's given up everything else. She's like Madonna.
she's just
or Bowie.
Sansa.
Yeah.
So we talk about this pre-show. You know, you almost... The inkling of giving the house to...
I give everything.
To Elena.
Every single thing in the world. If I owned it, I would, asking nothing back, give it to Dame Diana Rigg. She is amazing, and she will be the winner of every scene she's ever in for the rest of her life.
Right. So we got
and this scene is a lot of fun.
Yeah, brilliant, you know... untangling of the complex family tree when Marjorie and Loras marry their mom and brother, respectively.
Yes. At the very least, he'll be your stepfather.
Right. At the very least.
It's amazing.
You know, it's a lot of little
this
things.
This is incest movie explained to the
Broken
best
down.
Extent ever.
Tywin demanding Tyrion, you know, get with his wife.
Yes.
Stick it in her.
Yes.
Joffrey continues to climb the douche ladder with, hey, maybe I'll step by and rape you later.
Yes.
And really douching out his Kingsguard, too. Like, oh, my Keen scar will hold you down.
Well, yeah, but that's important. We've known, and you and I have even talked about this, is the King's Guard is full of jackasses.
And Cersei brilliantly rebuffing Loras there.
That's what I'm saying. This is my favorite scene in the history of the series. In the history of the series, it's my favorite scene. It lasts two lines, and Cersei is sitting at the wall, standing at the wall, and Loras comes right up to her, and there's a long silence, and then he says, well, my father once said, and she says, no one gives a damn what your father once said, and walked off, and that's it.
Boom. And then it leaves in here going,
It's awesome. That's really fantastic.
Yeah. Great, great scene. And Tyrion stands up for not lying down.
Yes.
What's
great about that is he and his father have a moment where they're both trying to save his life. Because the last time someone fucked with Joffrey in public, he had his head cut off.
This is a big deal,
and there's nobody to stop him.
You don't piss this kid off.
Right. So Charles Dance of Golden Child fame.
Did you get my link?
I did not. You sent me a Golden Child link? I don't need a Golden Child link. I have that movie memorized.
I sent you Cyborg Tywin. From Space Truckers.
Space Truckers, Charles Dance.
Yes.
Good work. No, Charles Dance
is gets some booty time.
Like I've said, Charles Dance has been way better than everything he's been in for his entire career, and it continues now.
He's got a recent...
But it's a wonderful bit with Charles Dance and Peter Dunklage. They conspire together to save his life from their angry, toe-headed jackass kin.
And Tyrion dives right in because he's smart enough to know how to play the moment.
Yep.
And he has that great line at the end of the scene where, he kind of puts it out there.
I once vomited.
Well, that's sort of leading, tying up that scene. He's playing the part.
Yeah.
So he, maybe he did it. He did vomit.
Yeah.
Maybe he did. It doesn't matter. He was smart enough to, a good lie is in the details, and he put some details in there for Joffrey. But then, it cuts immediately from that into the bedchamber of Tyrion and Sansa.
As it should.
Where he says, listen, I'm not going to lay in your bed, and I'm not going to sleep with you until you're ready to sleep with me.
My lady.
And she says, what if I never am? And he just holds up his glass and says, and so my watch begins.
Yes.
Which... I thought that was
winter
great.
Is coming.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, because of course Tyrion has great one-liners. I mean, that's his wit. He's a smartass, so of course he would have something good to say there.
What I was actually expecting is they'd get into the room together, and he wouldn't be drunk at all.
Oh, right.
I was kind of expecting that, just because that's something of a trope in fantasy fiction nobles and that. Rich characters or clever thief type characters have pretended to drink to excess and then feigned drunkenness, and I mean it goes back to a lot of different things. There's a scene in one of the first kind of fantasy books that I remember reading was by Gillian Bradshaw, however she pronounces it, in her Arthurian trilogy. I think it was in Winter's Shadow, where Arthur drinks poisoned wine that's clearly poisoned by what's his name? Frickin' Mordred. And he drinks it. No, actually, it's poisoned by Guinevere to try and kill Mordred. And he drinks it, and then he doesn't die, and everybody's freaked out, but he's figured out, through many years of being who he is, figured out a way for the poison to go down his arm and not drink. And that scene is always what I think of when I remember Davos and the Septon. Mm-hmm. From Storm's End, trying to kill Melisandre.
Right.
So it's like there's it's this long thing of nobles seeming to drink while not drinking. And I was expecting that from Tyrion.
But
that said, it was kind of awesome that he was just
straight up
schnockered.
Yeah. He just passed it out.
That totally works.
There was a little thing here that hit me. And I don't know if it was just if I was reading into it, but...
Well, why don't you hit me with it?
I will. When he says that line to her about, I won't sleep with you until you're ready, until you want to.
Right.
I thought that was like a a departure from Shay. Like, he was, there was this opening of, I could be with something better, and I'm going to play this the right way. Not just because he, because he is an honorable guy, and he would do that regardless. He's not a douche.
No.
But there was just something about how, I will wait for you. I will wait until you're ready. Because he could have had sex with her right then, and it wouldn't have been rape. She was willing to do it because it was her duty, and that's what's expected of her.
That is rape. I know what you mean.
No, I mean, it wasn't like date rape or something. It still would have been culturally acceptable. She's like any. She could have been with any
rape,
other person.
Rape is culturally acceptable to these people.
True, and but, I don't want to get into those things. I'm not trying to relegate that act at all. Like,
no.
Make it okay. It seemed to me like he could have done it, and it wouldn't have been grotesque.
Right, but he would have lost her forever. There is a thing here.
He's doing the right
where
thing.
We see again that Tyrion wants someone to love him.
Right. To choose to love him.
He believes, even though there is currently evidence to the contrary, that he has had that once. He's still looking for that again. And if he can convince this woman that he is worthy of this.
Woman.
Well, that is when he'll consider this, and that's I think in keeping with who Tyrion is in this universe. I think it's well done.
All right, and
but no, he you know whether she says she'll submit to it or not, you don't do that.
Sure, but yeah. I thought. I mean, my bigger point was, I thought there was a glimmer of, I would be with you for real. Like, Tyrion saying that to her is like...
Oh, yeah, saying that to her.
I would be with you for real. Which means he's walking away from Shay because he wouldn't split himself.
Well, no, the thing with Shay is I think it's something that the writers and directors have been doing well recently, which is making it clear that she's not someone to be with.
She's a hoe.
Well, we all knew that, but she's also unreasonable and a little ridiculous.
All right, so now we have Dario declaring himself for Danny.
Yeah.
And this is the big, we see the Titans, Bastard, Miro, and Prendall's heads out of the bag.
Yes.
And, the big spoiler here is that in the books, there are...
This does
a couple
happen.
Of heads, but Miro is not one of them.
No.
Because he comes up later. He comes back.
And in a much better way. I really think that I'm frustrated with how they treat Dany because they both have her incredibly important and able, and then they turn around and make her dependent upon these other guys. And in the books, she is never, ever... ever dependent upon other people.
Right. Well, she is at the beginning, and that's why she refuses to be so afterwards, because she was dependent on her brother, and then she was dependent on Drogo. And when the one was killed and she lost the other, when he was killed by Quaithe.
Right. But once she was with Drogo, they were equals. Once it happened.
Right, he allowed her to be an equal.
But then he meant it.
But still.
When he died, she fought for everything she's got.
She fell in love with him. He loved her. But, it was still, he acquiesced to it. And he could have easily not.
But
and
after he died, never again.
I don't need anybody. I won't
never
depend
again.
On them.
Yeah.
So.
And that's important. And they lost that in this bit.
A little bit of, this guy just walks in. I mean,
first of all,
you're sitting in the tent. You need to have a whole bunch of people guarding you because it's a tent.
Right. But no, that happens in the book. But it's important to know that he didn't just hand her the mercenaries. He handed her these two and didn't get himself killed. She was going to kill them all.
Right. They were dead.
Yeah. He proved himself. He didn't get the mercenaries for her. In the book, she got the mercenaries and decided not to kill him.
Right.
That's a very different thing.
Very, yes, especially the way they portrayed it.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I really see your point now about the you know, lowering her.
Yeah.
And not showing how
I think it's she really had the upper hand there. It's not just that she has these dragons, and it's not just that her parents were kings, and it's not just these things. She's incredibly able. And right. they missed an opportunity to show again that that's the fact.
Yeah. So, you know, we get... I got to cap it off one more time with reiterating. I just hope that Daario becomes more extravagant.
Yeah.
Because it's boring seeing him as, you know.
A pale imitation of her son and stars.
Having the naked, you know, the hilts of naked ladies isn't enough to make him Daario. It's got to be a little bit more.
Well, he looks like a pale... In every way, version of her ex-husband, you know, of her late husband.
Yes, you know, right. Okay, so scene 12.
Boring.
You know, boring. Yeah. We get Shay smiling because the bed sheets are unsoiled.
Yeah,
and that's all that happens.
Yeah,
and then the final scene: gathering of the crows.
Interesting. In the last episode, we didn't talk much about this, but the way they phrased it when he found the obsidian blade was funny, because he found this little knife, and she says, "What does it do?" And he says, "Well, it doesn't do anything." It's not like they found a remote control. They found a knife. You stab things with a knife.
Right.
You know,
I mean, looks like it. It looks like a big arrowhead or spear.
Yeah. What does it do? I mean, you point it at something and hope fire comes out of it? No. It's terrible dialogue. Terrible dialogue.
So, I mean, you see my notes. You know where I'm going with this. I'm wrong. I'll just preemptive strike there. But I thought the White Walker looked like the old bear. Like Mormont.
Well, he had the beard. He had the long hair. I feel like we've seen that White Walker before.
Stereotyping older Scottish actors.
No, I feel like we've seen that White Walker before. I feel like it.
All right.
Earlier in the season, we've seen that one.
And I felt the same way still.
Okay.
And, I'm not, I wouldn't even try to make the argument. It's like, it looked like.
No, maybe it was. He's been around forever.
And, right. So maybe he just looks like a White Walker.
Like when you own a dog, you look like the dog. Right. Every Scottish actor looks like him because he's been around for 40 years. Yeah.
So, you know, here's
except David Tennant. He looks nothing like that.
Who is? What do I know him?
Who is David Tennant? You're killing me.
It's terrible with names.
We are a dork podcast. You just lost all dork cred.
No, it's because I'm terrible with names. I'll know the face.
He's Doctor Who.
Matt Smith.
No, the second to last.
The Brits aren't very funny people.
He's not a Brit. He's a Scot.
So... The obsidian blade, dropping it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Well, he's fat.
So what? You stop and you pick up the blade. The one thing.
He did not.
I watched the scene again. He runs away. He drops that blade and there is no scene of him picking up that blade. He leaves it. It's gone. Yeah, absolutely. And the blogs are on fire about it.
I'm giving him this, like, you're kidding look.
Right, and I am not.
Because I missed that.
He
kills the White Walker,
though. He kills the White Walker.
And then he just drops the blade.
And then they just run. He goes, come on, let's go! And they just run. Because it's stuck in his back.
Yeah, that's
and then he turns to ice and, you know, does the whole, you know, Witch of the West melt into the ground thing.
I'm melting.
And the blade's just there. It falls to the ground. And they just run right on by it.
Well.
The one thing.
They've treated Sam as a big, dumb, fat stereotype since the moment he showed up.
Come on.
So who knows?
The one thing that you know kills the biggest threat.
Oh, I know.
You've ever seen.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Valyrian Steel does the job, too, but I know that. These guys don't know it.
Incompetent.
Yes.
Incompetent.
Sam or me?
No, of course you.
Thank you.
No, I meant Sam. You know, we have the gathering of the crows, which I thought this was to go a different way here.
Yeah.
When all those crows started coming and there was that vague person in the background. I didn't know there was a White Walker. I thought it might be somebody else.
Who do you think it was going to be?
Well, I don't want to say it because we haven't met him yet, but I thought it was going to be somebody else.
Who do you think it was going to be?
Well, in the book... The gathering of the crows happens when one very specific character comes and meets Samwell and Gilly.
Yes, but how do we know it's not that?
Well, it was a White Walker who showed
up. Oh, this one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. When all those crows came,
well,
I thought,
but we know the one who meets Sam and Jilly anyway is a White Walker.
Are we kidding? We don't know that.
Yeah, we do.
We don't.
Dead.
No. That's not even a spoiler.
It's
we don't know
dead.
That.
We do.
We don't.
It's
surmising based
and it's
on
white
logic.
With big blue eyes, and the horse is dead. It's dead.
The deer isn't dead.
Deer's totally dead. Yeah.
Cover your ears, people.
Yeah, you're completely wrong.
He's spoiling you.
He's
with
all right
with
the
guesses.
The deer is in the middle of decomposition. It doesn't mean
is
it's
it
dead.
Blah 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 blah. All right, so.
I don't think this episode was very funny for us. I felt like I wasn't as funny as I wanted to be. Were you funny?
Maybe the beer wasn't as strong. Maybe it was stronger.
It was a stronger beer. But there was only one. Usually
only
we do
one.
Two.
Right.
We're going to do another episode of some sort right now. We're not sure what we're going to talk about. But we're going to talk for a little while, whether it turns into an episode or not. And we'll probably have another beer. So maybe you should continue listening.
So, this was... our first double-digit episode. This was episode 10.
10.
Nice
round number.
Nice round number. We have our first giveaway. And as always, you can find us at our Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/TheLazyMuse.
Yes.
And you can find me specifically at TheLazyMuse on Twitter.
And I'm on Twitter at TotallyKidding. Or you can find me on pinetarpress.com under the heading Obstructed Review.
And if you have any comments, you can send those to theverylazymuse@gmail.com.
I sent one. I meant it.
That's right. Or go to our Facebook page and leave a comment. And all these episodes, the podcast themselves are tagged with Earl's. And you can find Pine Tar Press on there as well. So you can just click through and find that very easily. So thank you for joining us. I'm Jimmy G.
I'm Eric Grattan.
We'll talk at you later. I'm not sure what worries me more.